Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. Where we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape. Definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's a mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in. And recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis, when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really couldn't devour him. And from that point then we hear a name change. Rearrange the game so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam show. Let's go!
Power Slam Show. We are once again live and in living color, getting funky like a monkey, ooh, if you will. We are here. We are now. I am Chris Featherstone, representing Crave Wrestling, Pancakes and Power Slams, along always with my esteemed Pancakes and Power Slams co-host, Derek. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well as well. Appreciate it. We got a good night. We got a good show tonight. Tuesday Night Titans, Derek. The new Tuesday Night Titans.
It is Chris Featherstone, Raw correspondent, Pancakes and Power Slam correspondent, Derek, along with Jim Cornette. We are going to rock the house tonight. I'm just kidding. Jim Cornette was unable to show up.
No, he'll be here. He canceled last minute, just like he did with his promotion with Smoky Mountain.
He had a coupon for a Golden Corral, and it was a specific time that he had to be there. So, but that's understandable.
Yeah. I would hope that Pancakes and Power Slam show would be a little bit more important than. And a visit to Golden Corral while they're closed. So
I wouldn't go that far. I'm just kidding. Everybody, this is the place to go. Tuesday night wrestling action and just the best talk of wrestling that you're going to get. This is the place to be. Pancakes and Power Slam, 347-884-8452.
Absolutely. Pancakes and Power Slams, 347-884-8452, as Derek so greatly stated. And we will continue to enjoy and buzz the crowd, buzz the wrestling crowd, as we are at episode 108. 108 episodes dating back from April of 2012, over 2 years on Blog Talk Radio, and there's so much more we got in store. There's so many opportunities that are being set up. We are in the makings. We are in the development stage right now of doing some really, really next level things with the show. We got some good people who are backing the mission up, and just stay tuned. We got more interviews scheduled. We got more trivia. We got more topics. 108 episodes. 2 years, it's always a very, very, very fun time at Pancakes and Power Slams. Just a special shout-out to the chat room that's filling up and people who tweet at Crave Wrestling during the show. All of the shows and all of the people who are continuing to support us via partnerships, via the sites that I write for, which is WrestlingInc.com and Bleacher Report. Special shout out to people who also support Pancakes and Power Slam, such as WhatCulture.com. And, of course, WeAreWrestling.net. Check them out. They continue to be a very, very buzzworthy site, buzzworthy group over there at WeAreWrestling.net. Very up-to-date news, a very good following. It's spread like a bad rash as far as the following is concerned. And so join the revolution over at WeAreWrestling.net. So, and as far as Crave Wrestling is concerned, tweet at Crave Wrestling, Facebook.com, Crave Wrestling. Join the Crave Wrestling Facebook page. And just continue to support Pancakes and Power Slams as we continue. Oh, the chat room, I guess the chat room is trying to play some Stump the Host. We usually have those scheduled, but, hey, I mean, I don't go down without a fight. I don't leave any trivia question unturned. So with that being said, trivia, the chat room states, what was Hulk Hogan's name in Rocky III? And that answer, chat room, is Thunderlips. There you go, Thunderlips, to start off the trivia with via the chat room. I usually start off trivia for those who are new listeners to the show. Speaking of trivia, what was the nickname of Paul Ellering? What was the nickname of Paul Ellering? And chat room already answered it. Precious, good job. Very, very good job. And what would, okay, to one up the chat room, what would he carry to the ring with him? All right, let's get on to the New York Times. Absolutely, good job. The chat room's on it tonight. Derek, I don't know. You might get stomped yourself. I might ask one of the people in the chat room to give you a question and potentially stomp you and see what we got there. But yeah, it's spontaneous so many times. Of course, we have a format, but we have so many spontaneous conversations. We've branched off to talking about the Mid-South and talking about other territories. We just have so much fun talking about pro wrestling. And as Derek says all the time, 90 minutes is never enough. So we'll try to cram as much as we can. Going into WWE Raw, we'll start off with Stephanie McMahon talking to Daniel Bryan and Brie Bella. Kayfabe aside. Well, of course, the kayfabe was aside, period, with the whole Total Divas. People knew that they were going to get married, and they got married after WrestleMania. This is Daniel Bryan's first week back after WrestleMania. And he got a tombstone to the outside, a tombstone to the steel steps, and a tombstone to the table. So Old School Kane is back on Raw. I like Old School Kane. The only thing is with Kane, man, he is one of the most flip-flop face-to-heels. I mean, Jericho is my favorite, but he definitely have it says, hey, Derek, here's a trivia question. What was Jake Roberts' persona in WWE?
I have to think about that. That's a good one.
Someone's calling you out on the chat room, sir. Yeah. But the thing is with Kane, you know, I like this Kane. I like the mask. I like the mask with the hair. I'm cool with it. I think that's the best Kane. Kane in the mask is a good idea. When he took the mask off, I just couldn't stand corporate Kane. And I think that they're realizing that corporate Kane is probably not the best idea. The monster, the big red monster Kane, is a good idea. But the thing is, he just flip-flops so much between face and heel. He doesn't really have much. I would say his level of intimidation isn't as strong as it used to be when he was a solid face or a solid heel for at least some former time. So when he first came back in the mask, he feuded with Zack Ryder and John Cena and was a heel for a second and then aligned himself with Daniel Bryan with Team Hell No, and then, you know, feuded with Bray Wyatt before he left, and then he came back, and that's when he went to Corporate Kane, and it's a bit confusing to me at times. But right now, Kane with the mask is a good idea. I just don't know how long it'll last. I think we'll see a match between Kane and Daniel Bryan at Extreme Rules. I'm totally fine with that because Extreme Rules is usually not a pay-per-view where titles change, and this will be a good filler match for the title at a pay-per-view such as Extreme Rules because they can have a nice stipulation that adds on to it and, you know, make it a worthwhile match.
Yeah, I don't see how they're going to make that a worthwhile match, actually. I mean, with Kane, yeah, it's great he put his mask back on. But everyone, Daniel Bryan, I mean, he's going to be the victor. And it's Extreme Rules, it's a filler match. I mean, there's not really going to be a whole lot going on. They can spread this storyline out for a while, but again, anything that kind of involves Kane, you just know that Kane's going to end up getting the flop. And it's just going to be business as usual. So, filler, you got that on the head.
Yeah. I eventually down the road see like probably a Batista and against Daniel Bryan, or even Brock Lesnar, Daniel Bryan, which I don't know how I feel about that. Although I wasn't too big on CM Punk and Brock Lesnar, and they tore the house down at SummerSlam last year. So Brock Lesnar and Daniel Bryan, I'm sure they could deliver a really good match, but I'm not too sure. I'd prefer Cesaro and Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. But as far as a draw is concerned, Brock Lesnar would be a draw. It would make sense to say, you know, he beat The Undertaker, he conquered the streak, and Daniel Bryan, now he wants your title. Daniel Bryan beating Brock Lesnar would make even more sense because it would make him more over as a champion. But at this point, Brock Lesnar kind of comes and goes as he pleases and gets what he wants. So it definitely wouldn't surprise me if Daniel Bryan drops the title to Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam, just for Lesnar to probably lose it at Survivor Series.
Man, you're looking like 6 years into the future. So, but I mean, that's what
yeah,
we could do
six,
here.
Seven.
Take the power plan. So, yeah, I mean, Brock Lesnar coming back into the fold after Paul Heyman last night just totally, my client Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar, he's a brute. I mean, that's what he is. I wouldn't really call him a professional wrestler as far as, like, the Bret Harts and the Jerichos and everybody. He does make a draw because he's a big name. He's a big entity, especially since he did destroy the streak. But again, Brock Lesnar is just kind of a filler name for me as well. I don't know he's part-time. I mean, he comes and goes. He shows up at the great places. So, I mean, he's good for what he's worth, but I wouldn't really put too much emphasis on Brock Lesnar much anymore. I mean, how much higher can he get than beat the streak?
We'll see. We'll see if he gets that world title, that WWE World Heavyweight Championship. I wouldn't be too big on it, but it could work out. Next, we have bad news. Barrett defeating Sheamus cleanly in the Intercontinental Title tournament match. They obviously have some high hopes for Bad News Barrett. I like Bad News Barrett. I think it's a good character. It grew on me. But Sheamus losing clean is very, very few and far between. But the crazy thing about that is that Sheamus lost clean to Batista on SmackDown. So Sheamus is on a bit of a losing streak after hardly ever losing clean. But again, you know, at the end of the day, I really, really like the concept of the Intercontinental Tournament, and I think it's really doing a good job reviving the tournament, reviving the Intercontinental title scene.
Yeah, I do. I'm glad they're still going with it. You know, Sheamus losing cleanly to Barrett. That was weird. That was different. No one really saw that coming. And especially, I didn't see the second match that they had of the tournament coming as well as far as the outcome. But, you know, this could be something for Bad News Barrett to really hone in on. Maybe they got something else going on for Sheamus in the future. They didn't want to tie him up at the IC Championship. But it was a good match, and again, hats off to Barrett. That was a good push for him. Bad News Barrett role's kind of getting over a bit. So, yeah, see where it goes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have some – the only thing with Barrett, though, is he's been Intercontinental Champion before, and it wasn't a good run at all. So – I don't know. I mean, I think that they need someone different, and we'll go over to the other match. But I don't know. I'm just not really big on the fact that they are not really they're giving him a good push for sure. Hopefully, but the problem is that. They're pushing him to essentially be the Intercontinental Champion. That's very possible. But, you know, just because he's a different gimmick doesn't mean he's going to be a good champ now. So we'll see how that goes. Los Matadores and El Torito defeating 2 out of 3 MB and Hornswoggle. This match was such a throwaway match. They've been feuding Hornswoggle and El Torito much, you know, ever since their little thing on Main Event. I just don't understand why they're plugging Hornswoggle to be a member of 3MB. It just doesn't make any sense to me. They're trying their best to just insert Hornswoggle anywhere, and I it just doesn't make sense. I like Sheamus. It would make sense from an Irish type thing, Leprechaun, that he may be with Sheamus. He was with Sheamus for a very hot second, or something else. If you have to have Hornswoggle on the show, I mean, he was with Kali for a second. I think that's probably a good way the good place to put him, because he's just I just really don't understand why they're doing that. Los Matadores, I like Los Matadores as a tag team. I respect their in-ring ability. But just El Torito as well. I mean, he's very agile, very acrobatic. But just, you know, I would rather for them to do something with the U.S. title instead of concentrate so much on a feud between Hornswoggle and El Torito.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a sideshow is what it is. They don't really know what to do. You got crap. How do you make it smell better? This really doesn't gel well. Again, like you said, it's a throwaway match. Let the WWE do what they're going to do with these guys, and let's not focus too much on it until they actually put out something really great. And the finish was horrible. The whole match was just an abomination, so I don't really have a whole lot more to say other than just the fact that it's a sideshow match, and let them get their 5 minutes of whatever they need to get out of them.
Yeah. It's just a bit time-wasting for me. Next, we have an Evolution in-ring promo interrupted by The Shield. I really, really, really like this build. I really, really like this match. Here's the thing. There's reports that we had on Wrestling.com that Batista's doing some movie work for a new movie that's supposed to come out in August, I believe, but he's doing some promotional work, so he'll most likely be gone after Extreme Rules. So this is pretty much a lock that that Evolution is going to put The Shield over, and that's exactly what it should be for. There's no way that Evolution should put over Shield, should go over Shield, because Shield is, you know, the faction that should be. They are the faction that rose to the top? Because the Wyatt family is kind of dissolving as far as popularity a bit. People still like Bray, but just the Wyatt family as a whole is not that interesting anymore because the feud has been going on for 4 months, for 3 months, and it's been boring the whole time. And, you know, we'll get to the main event, but the Shield is the faction of the WWE right now, and reforming Evolution to make to put the Shield over is just absolutely fantastic, and I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea. I mean, to put those three together, there's really nothing else you can do with Triple H and RKO and Batista at this point other than just bring up past glory days, minus Ric Flair, of course. And to put the Shield over, they're doing something with the Shield that's constructive for the Shield. There was a long period that, you know, we kept saying, well, the Shield, they're not really doing anything. I mean, they're just coming out. There was so much hype behind them, and they're just kind of stale. Something's coming out of it now. It's finally starting to looks like it's going to pay off. See where this goes. And again, the Evolution, yeah, that's good to see them together again, I guess. Not really. I don't, just for past accolades, but I mean, what else are you going to do with the three of them?
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's, oh, wait a minute. I think someone is challenging me here. What was the name of the perfume that Rick the Model Martel carried with him? I think we've probably asked that within one of the 108 shows, but arrogance—that is the correct answer. How about this? Who won the 1990? As a matter of fact, I'm just going to throw out numbers. I'm just going to throw out years in the Royal Rumble, and we'll see through, you know, chatting at Crave, tweeting at Crave Wrestling, or the chat room. Who has the correct answer? So the first Royal Rumble that I'm going to throw out is 1989. All right, next we have the Usos defeating the Rhodes Brothers. Good job, Big John Studd. Great job, Tyrone. I don't know. I don't like what I'm seeing here. It looks like we have, you know, we had a shorter match, surprisingly. It was an okay match. I wasn't expecting the finish to be like that. But we having some dissension with the Rhodes Brothers, and it seems like Cody may be the one that is kind of teasing the heel turn. I don't like this. I'm okay with Cody having a singles run. I prefer the Rhodes Brothers because I just don't see Cody. The very fact that they don't have the WWE and the World Heavyweight Championship anymore, there's only going to be a very select few people who will have their hands on that title anytime soon. So Cody and Goldust are in a good spot right now because if they break up, they'll have a few that'll last probably a pay-per-view or two, and then they'll both be jobbing on main event. So breaking them up now is not a good idea since there's only one big title now. And we kind of saw that on Raw, which I don't like. And then, but on the flip side, I am liking the fact that they're pushing Rybacksel. Derek and I, for many weeks, We'll talk badly about Rybacksel and even play the Beverly Hills Cop theme song and say that that's more intriguing than Rybacksel is. But I will say, though, I'm not too proud to admit any type of change of heart. Rybacksel is starting to grow on me a little bit only because I think that they're a viable opponent to go against the Usos to make the Usos look like fighting champions.
Yeah, Rybacksel, we ripped on them a lot. But, I mean, as far as them growing on you, they're good together. Apart, they're garbage. And but together, they click. They really put a good tag team together as far as someone contenders. Somebody that seems convincing enough to run for the tag titles or to have the tag titles. just to be in that picture along with the Usos. And the Usos, me personally, I know you've always been a fan. They've grown on me as well. I didn't think much of them in the beginning, but they've really showed their dominance over some time. And the whole Team Rhodes, I don't like to see the breakup either. But, I mean, it's inevitable. It's going to happen. Every tag team breaks up. Cody Rhodes being a heel, to me, it does kind of make sense. I mean, why not? I mean, with Goldust is almost there just as a novelty purpose. That, you know, the guy can still do it. He's still going. Maybe he's trying to set a platform for Cody a bit. But, yeah, I'm not against the Cody Rhodes heel turn, even though he was heel previously before all this with the face mask and everything. But I'm going to go, and I want to see what's going to happen out of this. So I'm kind of interested to see what the next few weeks are going to happen between the two.
That's a great analysis there. And next we have Emma defeating Layla. They're really doing a lot with this Emma and Layla feud, including Santino Marella and Fandango, your boy.
Yeah.
It's cool. See, on the flip side, you know, I'm not a fan of the 3MB and Los Matadores feud, but I am a fan of this feud. I like Santino. I've been a Santino fan for a while. I think Emma's this is a good spot for Emma on the main roster, and then Layla partnering with Fandango is good, much better than Summer Rae, and Layla can wrestle better than Summer Rae as well. Summer Rae is a good, she's a decent wrestler, but Layla's been former Divas champion, so of course she can wrestle. So it was good. I like what I see with this, and, you know, I don't know what the culmination of it is. Maybe a mixed tag between the two or the Extreme Rules. I'll be fine with that. So it's a good feud for those four. I mean, knowing that they won't see anything else greater, they're at least having some specific television time geared towards their feud. So, you know, hats off to that.
Yeah, have fun. It's not bad. I mean, kind of the Emma and Santino, it kind of reminds me of the Crash Holly and Molly Hardcore. What was her name?
Molly Holly.
Molly Holly, that's right. When they were just smitten and in love and all that. Anyway, that's what that reminded me of, especially when they had the two snakes at the end of the match kind of fighting each other and like, what? Yeah, again, kind of sideshow, but, yeah, I can see a good match between the two if it's a mixed tag match with the Fandango, the world's greatest wrestler. And it just kind of shows that I didn't say that out loud, but to pull out the sock and put the snake on her hand and all that, and cheese factor was okay. So, yeah, it's a good filler.
Yeah, I agree. RVD defeating Cesaro by countout due to Jack Swagger interfering. And this is another thing that is just absolutely weird and confusing to me. You have Jack Swagger heel feuding with Cesaro heel, but get babyface pops, but is aligned with Paul Heyman. Again, really, really weird conundrum of a feud here. And I really don't care about a Swagger-Cesaro feud. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that little moment led to a match between the two at SmackDown coming up here this week. If this match leads to Extreme Rules, this, honestly, as much as I like Cesaro and as much as I appreciate Jack Swagger's in-ring ability, this could be a potential bathroom break match to me, because I have no desire to see Real Americans go against, well, the former Real American team going against each other. And I'm still not sold on Cesaro being with Paul Heyman. We talked about at the round table. And, you know, the only thing I can see working is if Cesaro breaks away from Paul Heyman and feuds with Brock Lesnar. I suppose it would make sense for that to happen at SummerSlam, but they may be doing Daniel Bryan and Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. So SummerSlam or Survivor Series, one of the two. Bottom line is, Cesaro and Heyman is really confusing, and RVD advancing leads to RVD and Barrett in the finals, which, again, I don't see RVD winning that. RVD versus Big E at Extreme Rules would be a pretty good match, but we'll see. Bottom line is Cesaro and Swagger does not interest me at all.
It's not that interesting, especially since they're just going to build to be on SmackDown. I mean, that's a death knell right there as far as, you know, it's not going to go really anywhere after that. And I'm a huge RVD fan. I went on a tirade last week about him. And I love RVD, but it really didn't make a whole lot of sense for him to win last night. It just, I mean, he's already been IC champion six times, I believe they said. It did not make sense, especially the way he won. It just wasn't really that legit in a way. RVD's in-ring ability, I think. Actually, last night, though, I saw a few botches last night, I think.
Yeah, I did, too. Yeah.
Wasn't really telling. It was like the first part of the match. It ended well as far as, you know, their maneuverability and everything. But it just seemed really awkward the first 5-10 minutes of that match just as far as the in-ring moves. And like they weren't on the same page or something. But after that, again, RVD went in. I mean, that's great. I want RVD to win. I love the guy. But it just really didn't make a whole lot of sense, especially with Cesaro supposed to be on this huge up-and-coming with Paul Heyman, which doesn't really make sense. I don't see Cesaro and Brock Lesnar headlining anything because it would be a squash match as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I think that they can build Cesaro up. They're not building him up correctly as a singles competitor right now. I don't think that they're doing that correctly. When they had him with Zeb Coulter, it worked. To be honest with you, when Cesaro first came with Oksana, that was better than Paul Heyman. And don't get me wrong, I think Paul Heyman's amazing. I think that he has some of the best mic work ever. But just that feeling of Paul Heyman with Cesaro just doesn't gel to me. So next we have Paige defeating Oksana. Again, I'm a Paige fan, and I think that they have a lot going with Paige. Just let it ride out and continue to let her defeat, you know, Divas, and she has a match with Tamina Snuka at Extreme Rules. That would be a really nice test, a really nice challenge. And so she's reviving she's being an active fighting champion, as AJ Lee was not. And so she's reviving the Divas division. I think it's going the right way.
I do. I think Paige is, so far, I mean, she's shown nothing but absolute awesome in-ring talent for the Divas division. Keep her going. I mean, this is something awesome. Of course, AJ's going to come back out. They're going to have their feud and rematch. But the two of them together could really spark some fire in the Divas division, something that I've been against for a while now as far as just the in-ring production of it all. But Paige is very – I'm very impressed with her. I think she's a breath of fresh air in the Divas division, something that they really needed.
Indeed. Absolutely. And then we have Alexander Rusev defeating Sin Cara. Another squash match. I wrote a column on on WrestlingInc.com as far as whether they should, where would Alexander Rusev be in 6 months? And it was almost unanimous that it was very bad and non-promising answers with that. A lot of people say dancing with Santino. A lot of people saying being fed to Cena. I think that in 6 months he still may have some promise to him. It's just that somebody has to get him over. Somebody, these squash matches against Sin Cara and R-Truth and Xavier Woods, yeah, it makes him dominant, but he has to get in a big feud soon instead of having these squash matches. I suggested that he gets in a feud with RVD, and RVD puts him over at SummerSlam. I think that'll be a good, I think that'll be a good catapult for him. But to be honest with you, I see Vladimir Kozlov and Sylvester Turkai. I don't see a staying power persona with Rusev. He's got talent. I mean, the guy's got talent. He's just he looks like a beast in the ring, but I just don't see a longevity with him.
I don't see one either. It's kind of like he'll probably feud with like Mark Henry or somebody, and that'll be his high point. Then he'll be gone. There's just WWE just doesn't know how to, or maybe there's just not a way to build these massive brutes that just come in and conquer and demolish, and that's it. Now, you know, you got Brock Lesnar, of course, but he's an exception. But someone like Rusev, he's just kind of like a dust in the wind. Yeah, he's around to make a big push behind him, but doesn't really deliver to do anything. So, I mean, I don't look forward to seeing him, so let's, you know, what are we going to do?
Yeah. Maybe Sheamus might be a good idea, too, honestly. I think that would be a very hard-hitting match. If they did that, I think Sheamus versus Rusev would be even better, and then RVD. But I think I just don't see Sheamus, you know, just really. I really don't see Sheamus allowing Rusev to just give it to him, as opposed to RVD. RVD wouldn't care, and so one of those Sheamus or RVD would be ideal. I wouldn't put a title on him anytime soon, because he hasn't proven that whatsoever. Instead of just giving him a title and hoping that it works like they did with Curtis Axel, that just doesn't work anymore. So we'll see. We'll see where we get with Rusev. Next week, and then last we have John Cena was picked to go against the entire Wyatt family in the Raw Active poll. And it was a dud of a match, to be honest with you, and it really didn't give me any type of anticipation for their steel cage match scheduled for Extreme Rules. This feud has not been very interesting. I can understand the whole legacy thing that was at WrestleMania. I actually thought it was going to be a dark horse match and be one of the best at WrestleMania. It wasn't that good at WrestleMania either. And with the steel cage stipulation with it, I can see that it could have a possibility of being better. But just Bray Wyatt and John Cena, just the feud with them against each other is not interesting. And then at the end, it was just a really lackluster ending. I mean, he cradles John Cena's head and starts singing. He's got the whole world in his hands, and it was just really weird. And I really don't see a ton in Bray Wyatt based on this feud. If this feud is a sign of things to come, I don't see a main event push for Bray Wyatt.
Now, this probably has to be one of the worst feuds John Cena's been in. It makes no sense. I mean, the whole thing was so boring and drawn out. Seeing the whole world in his hands for about 10 minutes, it seems. It was.
Yeah.
They've got nothing to do with these guys anymore. Yeah, it's absolute garbage. I mean, it's boring. It's just boring. John Cena, I mean, I don't think he even knows how to make this any better. I'm at a loss for words. It's ridiculous.
He's got the whole world in his hands. It just
repeat that verse 20 times. I mean,
it just doesn't make sense at all. I don't see any point of making that happen, and maybe we'll see. I wouldn't mind a Bray Wyatt and Sheamus feud. I think I'm just making everybody feud with Sheamus because I think that Sheamus is a good wrestler, but I just don't see it. Bray Wyatt and Sheamus would do good. I think actually Bray Wyatt and Sheamus would have been a good WrestleMania match, better than John Cena. So we'll see. We'll see where that goes. As far as SmackDown is concerned, we get a Triple H in-ring promo. Big E defeated Alberto Rio finally after Big E losing twice cleanly to him. Then we get El Torito defeating Hornswoggle. More of that. Alexander Rusev defeating R-Truth. We just spoke about Rusev. Santino defeating your boy Fandango. And then, of course, Batista defeating Sheamus cleanly, which was pretty surprising. Again, go to wrestling.com. I write the SmackDown review articles. I usually do a lot of media between Instagram and tweet and videos, but I've been for the past couple of weeks. I've changed it up a little bit. I've tried to concentrate on one thing on the show or just a question that derives from the show. It's been getting a lot of hits. I got I think it was over 400 or so comments on the question that I posed was, is where do you see Alexander Rusev in 6 months? Like I said, and a lot of people didn't see him go much of anywhere. October comes around, has the potential to do something, but I'm not, if I was a betting man, I wouldn't go all in for that one. I wouldn't even bet high on that one for sure. Next we get Impact Wrestling. We're going to go a little bit more into this week because there was no review for it. Eric Young cuts a promo of a thank you, gets interrupted by Dixie Carter. Bully Ray comes out and forces Dixie to leave. Madison Rayne defeats Velvet Sky, getting ready for her match actually happening on Sunday at Sacrifice against Angelina Love. MVP talks in the ring. He talks about Samoa Joe and invites him to the ring, but Austin Aries appears. Leads to a match between them two coming up here this week. The Wolves defeats the Bromans due to a interference by DJ Z. Willow defeats EC3 and Rockstar Spud. For some reason, they are still holding on to Willow. This was so, a dozen plus years ago, close to 15 years ago. And for a split second, I said, okay, well, I understand that the Jeff Hardy character is getting a bit stale. It was an interesting thought to reinvent it, but I was never really holding on to this whatsoever. And just the whole Willow thing, don't get me wrong. I like Impact Wrestling. I would definitely take a job there if offered as a writer or a part of the creative team. But it just goes to show the level of Impact Wrestling compared to WWE. I mean, no disrespect to Impact Wrestling. I like it. Like I said, I like the product. It's definitely made a jump from when it used to be. About a year or two ago when there was under different management. A lot of new faces, a lot of showcasing of new people, which I'm a big fan of. But you wouldn't see a Willow character in the WWE, period. You just won't see that. It would just be a mockery. It would just be laughable. But Willow, Jeff Hardy is Willow, is basically a main event star. So then we saw EC3 attacking Willow post-match. Kurt Angle returns, so it's good to see that. Suplexes EC3. Looks good. His knee was – he banged up his knee and had surgery, but he came back and looks good. It only took him about a month to get it together, so – Kurt Angle and EC3, we'll probably see that at the pay-per-view. Tigre Uno defeating Sonata, tying their series 1-1, best of three for the X Division Championship. Bobby Roode defeating Gunner in a tables match. That was a pretty good match due to Gunner being distracted by James Storm. And then the last match was Eric Young defeating Abyss in the Monsters Ball. Really, really good match. I'm a big fan of Eric Young. I've said it before. I even tweeted it. Eric Young's my favorite wrestler in TNA. And he's been for a while, I mean, other than Sting. Sting, when he was there, when he was in TNA, Sting was. But been a big fan of Eric Young for quite some time, and he deserves it. So, real quick, before we get to Flavor of the Week, ROH, we had Cedric Alexander going against Roderick Strong, and Strong won that match. The Decade going against the Adrenaline Rush and the Andrew Everett, the Apex of Agility, and of course the Decade won that one. Of course, the Decade is Whitmer. And Jimmy Jacobs and also Adam Page, but with them is also Roderick Strong as a part of the group. So, yeah, and the Decade, for those who don't follow ROH much, the Decade is a heel faction that formed by Jimmy Jacobs and Whitmer and Roderick Strong of three people who's been in ROH for 10 years that don't want anyone else to really rise above them. So it's a decent faction. I don't see it going too far away. But it was a scramble tag. It was a Decade against Adrenaline Rush and against it was a six-man tag. It was scramble rules, so you didn't have to tag in and out. But the Decade won, so that was good. And the main event was Kevin Steen against Michael Elgin. And every time they go against each other, it's just an amazing match. And just the two of them together, Michael Elgin won, but wow, it was just an amazing match. And Steen and Michael Elgin has a really good future. I definitely wouldn't be surprised if Impact Wrestling or WWE, most likely Impact Wrestling, snatches him up, because Elgin's to be such a stout person. He's really good in the ring, very agile. So ROH is a great product. I always say good things about the products of ROH. And I definitely think that they'll be around for the long haul. Player of the Week, January 11th, 1993. WWE gave us their first episode of WWE Monday Night Raw. And it was from the Manhattan Center, of course, in New York, and just about all of the show was based on Bobby Heenan wanting to go inside the building, and slipped my mind as far as who was trying to get him. Sean Mooney. He was trying to get Sean Mooney. And to convince him to go into the ring, to go into the arena, it was pretty funny. He started dressing like other people, and even cross dressed. It was pretty funny, and it was a really good and promising start to what we see in the WWE right now. So, figured that it would be worthwhile to go back 21 years and talk a little bit about the Monday Night Raw. But before we do that, I think it's only appropriate that we would allow ourselves to be graced with the theme song.
Here we go.
Absolutely, ladies and gentlemen. First episode, 1993, January 11th, we get Yokozuna defeating Coco Beware in the squash match. And then another very short match, we got the Executioners losing to the Steiner Brothers. One interesting thing about the Executioners, one of them was Dwayne Gill, and which many people know by Gilbert. So he was on the first edition of Monday Night Raw. Very interesting little stat there. And then Shawn Michaels defeating Max Moon to retain the Intercontinental Championship. It was a decent match. It was the longest one of the night. And another thing that's interesting about that is that Max Moon was Conan in the mask. And so Conan was also on the first episode of Monday Night Raw. And then the final is The Undertaker defeating Paul Bearer. Defeating Damian Demento. He was with Paul Bearer. He defeated Damian Demento in a very squash match. And then we also saw Doink there. We also saw Kamala. With his, he was there. He had a segment where he ended up turning face, babyface, which Kamala and babyface weren't really synonymous, especially in his days in World Class Championship Wrestling, and his feud with The Undertaker actually just not too long before, and so it was a very good launch pad to. A good launch pad to just the fiber of the WWE we see today. I mean, it's still on. It's still thriving 21 years later. And Monday Night Raw was probably other than WrestleMania, it was one of the best decisions that the WWE ever made. And it really allowed them to really create an art of episodic television to now we anticipate Raw every week and we talk about it.
You know, Monday Night Raw, I remember before Monday Night Raw, you know, you had WWE Primetime, you had a few other shows that were okay. I mean, they were good. Usually it would be just your jobbers against the big-time stars. And every now and then you'd have the stars against stars, but Monday Night Raw really set the launching pad as far as how modern cable works as far as wrestling. And, I mean, what I liked about the first Raw, it was kind of an intimate crowd. There was it wasn't the huge arenas that you see now. It was kind of like a small event center.
Three-letter Raw on there.
Yeah, six-letters Raw.
Three-letters.
I mean, it was,
yeah.
It was a night that, you know, it was, again, like I said, I mean, it created the Monday Night Wars that night. I mean, that just set the staple. This is how wrestling's going to be from here on out. No more jobbers. We're just going to have, you know, this is how we're going to build our feuds. And again, that led to the every month we'll have a pay-per-view and things of that nature. So, but, you know, you can't deny the genius of Monday Night Raw. I mean, obviously it's been around for, you know, 20-some years now. So let's give it up. I mean, huge props. Vince McMahon didn't know what he was doing that night, probably. It was just like, let's see how this thing rolls. It was absolutely marvelous. And again, it's still going on today. I mean, people have tried to reproduce it with WCW Nitro. Just didn't work. Still holds up to what it is today. The formula's still there. It's gotten a lot glitzier and glamier. It's not as much as a... It was real gritty at first. It was just very... Like I said, like you were back in the old armory or something, or the high school gym, and here's Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart coming out. But it was a very intimate atmosphere. It worked well then. So my hat's off. Kudos. I mean, what can I say? Monday Night Raw stinks. There's no way. It's the best. It's the best show of wrestling that probably ever been produced.
Absolutely. Well, since we're so much on the roll of talking Monday Night Raw, why not talk about the second edition? A week later, still from the Manhattan Center Studios. Three matches that night. Mr. Perfect defeating Terry Taylor when he was terrific. Terry Taylor, ooh. Terry Taylor had so many gimmicks. And I remember writing an article. I wrote a Retro Wednesday article a while ago on Terry Taylor when he was in Mid-South. And he was a big name in Mid-South and even won the heavyweight championship there. Had a really long match with Ric Flair for the NWA title. And he didn't win, but it was like a 45-minute match. So in the late 80s, in the mid-80s, Terry Taylor was a big, big name. And so to go from there to that big name, that feuding with Gentleman Chris Adams and making a heel turn and going against Adams and having that type of feel to him and main event style feel to him, and then eventually going into the WCW, and if I'm not mistaken, he was just kind of like a middle of the road, you know, enhancement talent for a lot of the time. I mean, he won some, he lost some, but then he joined the York Foundation, if I'm not mistaken, with a couple other people, Ricky Morton and I think it was Tommy Rich. I think I was another person who joined the York Foundation of Alexander York, also known as Terry Runnels. He used to be married to Goldust. So when he went to WCW. Well, he went to WWE after he had a short stint in the Royal Class. After the Mid-South UWF successful stint that he had, it was probably the most successful stint. And then the Red Rooster thing kind of tried to launch off. He was with Bobby Heenan at first and then didn't really do well there. Then the Red Rooster gimmick was just, it was not good. I mean, for Taylor to have such really polished skills in the ring, to give him a Red Rooster character, I think I remember watching Legends of Wrestling. I watched that a lot. I think I watched every episode of Legends of Wrestling. And they were talking about gimmicks. And I think Red Rooster was brought up. And if I'm not mistaken, Michael P.S. Hayes said that you have to do the best with what you were given. I'm paraphrasing. But if you're given a Red Rooster character, this isn't going to go to a main event level at all. So he was there for about a year or so. He didn't last that long as the Red Rooster. Probably a year and a half or so. That's about it. A year and a half to 2 years, and then Terry, and then he became. He became Terrence Taylor in the York Foundation a little bit after he debuted in WCW, but still didn't last too long. And so came in as a heel, terrific Terry Taylor, and he put over Mr. Perfect. And before we go to the other two matches, I'm going to pose a question to you, Derek. Do you think that Terry Taylor would have made a good member of the Four Horsemen?
Wow. He would have been better than Mongo McMichael.
Yeah.
I don't know if he would have been a solid. member. I mean, he wouldn't have been like the original four or anything like that. Or even probably after the original four, Chris Benoit was probably the most solid member. But it's would he have made a great one? Would he be a member that we would talk about years later? That's like, wow, that guy, no. I don't think so. His role was great. He could have been better as far as the Red Rooster. That's pretty ridiculous. But overall, he's a lot more talented than I think what the WWE has given them credit for. So, well, he would have been a decent member, but he wouldn't have blown my socks off when they announced that he was a new member of the Horsemen. So,
I think that he would have made a good member, just because he had that look to him. He had that flair, Tully Blanchard style look to him, and to work, the choices that they made during Terry Taylor's successful stints and in the Mid South and UWF and early mid 80s. And he was so popular in Mid-South and UWA just around the time that the Horsemen started to become, I think if I'm not mistaken, the Horsemen debuted in 86. And that's when Taylor was pretty popular in Mid-South. And so they really had an opportunity to make him somebody. I really think they could have. Because having people like Lex Luger and Sid and Paul Roma out of anyone, definitely Paul Roma, and Mongo, and you know all them, but that, I mean that's later down in the late 90s. But as far as the people who are in the 80s, early 90s, the Paul Romas, the Lex Lugers, the Sids, bad idea. And to be honest with you, as much as he's my favorite wrestler of all time, Sting, when he was in there in 1990, was not a good idea. So I think Terry Taylor could have been in the addition instead of Sid. They could have put Terry Taylor or even Paul Roma instead of Paul Roma. I think Paul Roma is probably one of the worst ever. And I also wrote a Retro Wednesday top article about that too, as far as Paul Roma being such a horrible Four Horsemen member. I think that they could have shown some love for Terry Taylor and that he could have been a Four Horsemen member. I think it would have been successful because I think he had a polished look. I think he had a polished in-ring ability to have a very fluid kind of poetic character as far as his finesse is concerned. They could have done it. It would have worked better than Paul Roma, and it would definitely would have been a much better idea than the Red Rooster. What do you think about the Red Rooster? You think that could have ever went anywhere?
No, of course not. I mean, the Red Rooster, he had a nervous twitch. I mean, and he had a thing on his head or whatever. They dyed his hair red and in a mohawk. Yeah, it was silly.
Yeah, it was absolutely horrible. Next match, we saw Marty Jannetty defeating Glenn Ruth, which was really interesting because Glenn Ruth became Thrasher in the Headbangers. And it's really interesting to really see these, to really do research and watch videos of these older episodes of Raw that they – The names that became someone were just enhancement talents back in the early days of Raw, like Thrasher. You know, he was an enhancement talent for Marty Jannetty, and he ended up winning the tag team title, tag team champions, you know, what, five years later or so, less than 5 years later. And so... Pretty interesting. I think that it's good to understand that you got to go through some things, especially in wrestling. You have to go through a lot of storms to reach that paradise point. And so it was not too much of a long match. And then the main event was El Matador against Ric Flair. And basically it ended up in a no contest because Mr. Perfect, who was feuding with Flair at the time, came in and brawled with Flair. So pretty interesting. Second edition. And, of course, these were our shows, one-hour shows back then. But El Matador, that's another person who never went past the main event level. If you can think of one time where El Matador or even Tio Santana could have been the most popular and the closest to winning the World Heavyweight Championship, where would it be?
Oh, wow. I'm trying to think what all the times. I remember he had a quick feud with Mr. Perfect for the IC Championship. I can't remember if it ever went to pay-per-view. I don't believe it did, but it was on like WWE Superstars or something. It was like a main event in one of their jobber shows. And I remember that match. I've been trying to find it on YouTube. It was so good. And, of course, Mr. Perfect won, but it was to like a number one contender. Do you remember what I'm talking about? Maybe like 1990 or so.
Yeah.
Him and Mr. Perfect had a few.
It was the tournament to determine the Intercontinental Championship, if I'm not mistaken. Is that the same match that you were referring to? Yeah,
and
it was a good match.
His shining moment in my eyes as far as, you know, the closest he's come or anything. And I also remember I think it was Survivor Series 1990, he was one of the last members that won his team and went to, like, the final match. So I remember that.
And he went to the at the end of the Survivor Series, there was like a ultimate Survivor match, and he won. It was the faces and the heels, whoever were the sole or whoever were the last survivors of the match, got to go into the big final match. And it was him, Hogan, and Warrior, and they ended up winning too. So that's a really good one too. When he won the Intercontinental Championship, that's something to tout about. And then, what about Strike Force? What do you think about them?
I thought Strike Force was awesome. Girls in Cars. They had one of the best
Girls
things.
Girls in Cars,
Great. They were a good tag team. I mean, I remember when they broke up, and I think it was WrestleMania 3 or 4. But I remember Rick Martel walking out on a pedo. I mean, they were like the ultimate babyface tag team with their satin white jackets coming out, Girls in Cars, pumping their fists. I mean, they were great. Rick Martel, he also had a really great career of his own after Strike Force as a heel with the Rick the Model and Arrogance that somebody had mentioned earlier in the chat room. So it was a great tag team, classic 80s tag team, and kind of reminded me of the Pan Am Express. I think that was the Pan Am Connection, I believe.
Connection, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the turn of Rick Martel was pretty good in 89. That's when, he became really, and the thing is about Rick Martel is that he could have been much more involved than he was. I mean, he could have been a much bigger top heel than he was. I mean, of course, he had the feud with Santana, and he had the big feud with Jake Roberts, spraying the Arrogance in his face and having the blindfold match. And what was that, 6? Wasn't that WrestleMania 6? WrestleMania 6, wasn't it?
7.
They had the blindfold match.
And WrestleMania 7.
7, yeah, because 7 was Taker's first match against Snuka, and then 8 was Roberts and Taker. Yeah, so it was WrestleMania 7 was a blindfold match because 6 was him and Honky Tonk Man, right? Yeah, 6 was Roberts and Honky Tonk Man. Is at the
I think 6 was Rhythm and Blues against the Bushwhackers.
That was WrestleMania 6. Well, let's see here. I think. Well, what was WrestleMania? So was it 5 when Roberts and Honky Tonk Man? Can't have been 5. 5 was. Yeah. I think, yeah, you may be right on that one. It'll pop back up in my mind as far as which WrestleMania that was. But, yeah, I think it was, I remember he was feuding with Steamboat back in 86. And then it was one of those, he was a heel, and then he went against Honky Tonk Man. I think it was 87, so that was, yeah, so it was 3. So it was 3 when he went against Honky Tonk Man with Alice Cooper. So, yeah. But, yeah, I definitely think that, what's that?
Glad we got that figured out.
Yeah. with our, you know, wrestling talent together, we can conquer the wrestling world. So, and then finally, we'll do one more Raw. The third edition of Raw, being on the 25th of January 1993, again at the Manhattan Center in New York. We had Randy Savage defeating the Repo Man. Long match. It was pretty decent match actually. And which was still weird how the Repo Man was, you know, Demolition Smash, but he seemed so much smaller when he was the Repo Man. I remember when he was with Demolition, they made him seem like a big guy when he was with Axe and eventually Crush. I mean, he seemed like a legit, you know, big, dominant guy. And then the Repo Man comes around and he looks quite small, so I don't know if he was. I don't know if it's because he was just kind of, bending down all the time, and the way he was walking, he was just kind of, you know, curled up. But the Repo Man was a very flash in the pan gimmick that didn't really last long, and it shouldn't have lasted long because it was a bad idea. Then we get Kamala defeating the Brooklyn Brawler in the squash match. And then one of my favorite matches of all time, I actually had an article on wrestling.com about this, Mr. Perfect defeating Ric Flair in a Loser Leaves the WWE match. The match was over 20 minutes. I remember that day. I remember that match very clearly. My brother and I were watching it in the living room, and when we both wanted Perfect to win, and we just marked out so much and was running in the den and the living room and the front room, just we marked out when Perfect defeated Ric Flair. It was such a good match, and we really wanted Perfect to have some type of shine. And I really think 1993 could have been the year where Mr. Perfect could have been a top babyface at the time, but he ended up like going against Lex Luger and just kind of jobbing out to Shawn Michaels at the end of the year and just kind of being a nobody from the beginning of 93, where he beat Flair to the end of 93. It just kind of phased out, but he could have been a really, really prominent. He could have been a really top name in 93. I think 93 was his biggest opportunity to become world champion.
Yeah, that would have been great for Mr. Perfect. Except, I mean, I remember that's when he had, like, a lot of issues as far as his back and everything goes.
Yeah.
And Mr. Perfect, I mean, he IC champion. He should have been, he could have been WWF champion for a short time. I don't see him, like, because back then, heels didn't have the championship, you know. They did not have it for a very long time.
They just got fed to Hogan.
Hogan?
They got fed to Hogan.
No, I said that they didn't hold it for a very long time.
Right, heels. That's what I'm saying. The reason why the heels didn't have the championships because they all got fed to Hogan.
I gotcha. But, yeah, I don't see Mr. Perfect ever really being the WWE champion sorts. He was a great IC champion, but they had him as a heel, and again, that just didn't fly in WWE at the time. So I would have loved to see Kurt Hennig being a champion. He would have made a perfect champion, play on words.
He would have made a perfect, no pun intended, perfect champion.
At the time, he would never would have been champion.
What about, okay, so Slaughter was champion, was 91, when he defeated Ultimate Warrior, only had it for a few months. And then 92 was Hogan got the belt back. Well, 92 was 8, so Savage was champ at that time. It was Savage and Flair and Hogan and Sid. 93 was WrestleMania 9, and that was Bret Hart becoming somebody special in Yokozuna. And so I'm just trying to figure out around that time where Hennig could have been somebody big. How about this? Let me propose this before we cut off here, before we, you know, close this show out. What do you think, instead of Sid, instead of making Sid Justice such a big name in 92, and the Hogan and Sid match was the main event of WrestleMania 8, and it ended up in disqualification when Ultimate Warrior came back, when Sid and Papa Shango jumped Hogan. That was just weird to me. But what do you think about, instead of Sid versus Hogan, Mr. Perfect versus Hogan, or
that would have been,
yeah, or you could have done this. You could have had, not even for the title, Hogan versus Flair, because we never got a Hogan Flair match at WrestleMania. So Hogan versus Flair at WrestleMania 8, because we didn't need Sid. Hogan versus Flair and Savage versus Perfect for the world title at WrestleMania 8.
I was going to say Hogan versus Flair would have been a much better build. And someone like Savage could easily carry Sid Vicious or Sid Justice, carry a much better match than Hogan could have. I mean, that was blind leading the almost. So, I mean, I was about to say Flair versus Hogan would have been an awesome build. I mean, they really just destroyed that. That could have been a feud for the masses, but it was destroyed.
They said that they originally were planning on doing Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair at 8, but they had a match at like a house show, and I think it was at MSG, like in a house show, and it didn't go over as much as they wanted to, so they just kind of switched it around a bit. But, I mean, no matter what, Hogan and Flair, like you said, Hogan and Flair would have had the build behind it. And Sid Justice, to be honest with you, Sid Justice just, it just didn't work out. I mean, yeah, you come in as a face, and then you toss Hogan over, you know, the ring, and eliminates him at Royal Rumble 1992, causes Flair to win, and then that leads to, you know, animosity between Hogan and Sid. You know, it wasn't the best build to me. And Hogan versus Sid should have been replaced by Hogan and Flair. And Hogan and Flair didn't even need a title to be a part of it. Hogan versus Flair could have been a good enough build. But I don't know. I was just trying to insert Mr. Perfect in a WrestleMania world title match in his heyday. And I think that when you have 90 with Hogan and Warrior, of course that wasn't going to happen. And then 7, 91 being Hogan and Slaughter, with the whole Desert Storm, that was just the perfect, that was just a landmine. Well, that was a gold mine when it comes to just a really good moment to push Slaughter. Just very edgy. Kudos to everyone who served during that time, all of the casualties and all of the families, major, major kudos to them and even the people who served, for sure. Thank you very much. But at that time, from a WWE standpoint, it was a very, very opportune time to catapult and use that as a storyline. And so 91 and Mr. Perfect just wouldn't have meshed. So in my opinion, 92 would have been a good year for him to have an opportunity to become a star. And even 93 as a babyface. So I think that Perfect could have won. I think the Perfect could have had one title reign at least as World Heavyweight Champion.
Yeah, well,
yeah, I definitely think so. Looks like we got him a little difficulty there with Derek. I think that it could have happened, but, coulda, shoulda, woulda. There's always articles that make room for that. So all the coulda, shoulda, woulda's go into articles. Speaking of articles, WrestlingInc.com and BleacherReport.com is where you'll find me when it comes to thoughts in my mind that's translated into articles. So Retro Wednesday article every week, I write about something old school related. I have my topic ready, very interesting topic. And last week I talked about ECW, would it fare well in the new era, in the common era, and very, very good response with that. So I got an idea as far as what I want to do with this one, more of an open forum as well. So I just love what I do. Derek loves what he does as being a Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent. Like I said, there's so many opportunities that we have coming up the pike, so many things that 108 episodes has caused some buzz and generated some people that me on behalf of Crave Wrestling to be a part of their show and a part of their books that they've read and a part of the books that they're writing about wrestling. And just so many opportunities with Pancakes and Power Slams, working with some people now as far as former WWE personnel to get something really good launched. So thank you for all of your support. I really appreciate your support. And, of course, Derek has some closing words with episode 108 as we continue to go further and further into Pancakes and Power Slams, the new Tuesday Night Titans.
We are the new Tuesday Night Titans. Sorry about the last blip. But this is Pancakes and Power Slams. Everybody, please know this is the last stop for wrestling as far as talking about it, pondering future wrestling, past wrestling, present. We do trivia. We have chat room, Twitter. 347-884-8452 is the place that you need to be every Tuesday night, 11 o'clock, Pancakes and Power Slams. We have special guests. We have Stump the Host. We have all kinds of games, fun, trivia. This is the place to be. Chris Featherstone, Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent Eric. This is it. This is the place to be. New Tuesday Night Titan.
Yes, sir. You got it. you got it together, man. You said it very great there. All right, one more shout out to the Royal Rumble winner who won the 2002 Royal Rumble. Are you saying answers already?
No, I'm wrong, so.
Oh, okay. 2002 Royal Rumble winner, right before we get off the air here. Again, 347-884-8452 is the number to put in your back pocket for next week. WrestlingInc.com is where you'll find me. Bleacher Report, shout out to WeAreWrestling.net. Join us every week, every Tuesday night. We have trivia. You know, we're going to open ourselves much more to have interactive as far as call-ins are concerned. We had a lot of call-ins in the beginning of the series of Pancakes and Power Hands, but we have so much material that my apologies on behalf of the show. There's people waiting in the queue, but we'll open up ourselves and we'll schedule time to really have some good interaction with the call. So don't be afraid to call and we'll open ourselves up to have a great segment of call-ins, and we're going to start doing that too as far as being more interactive. So 347-884-8452 is the number to put in your back pocket to always use. Don't hesitate using it and calling in live. And also cravewrestling@gmail.com if you have any Retro Wednesday topics to that's on your mind to suggest to me. I'll give you a shout out. Be sure to put your Twitter hashtag or your Twitter handle on there, and I'll give you a shout out. Also, if you'd like to donate to Crave Wrestling, you know, we would definitely take donations. CraveWrestling@gmail.com is the PayPal email link to a donation there. Other than that, last-minute shout-outs, again, RearWrestling.net, special shout-out to them. And just continue to support Crave Wrestling as we continue to become the greatest talk show in the history of talk shows. And I know there's some good competition there, but we're confident enough that we have the ability to become, we're up there, but, you know, 108 episodes, we're still growing and we're still learning, and we want your feedback. So again, CraveWrestling@gmail.com. CraveWrestling@gmail.com is where you can give us your feedback or tweet at Crave Wrestling. We love to interact as well. So, ladies and gentlemen, that will close the show for this evening. Next week, be sure to catch us as well. Same time, same channel. And until next week, enjoy your week of wrestling. God bless. Daddy loves Elijah. Have a good weekend. Have a good week. Goodbye.